Well, you know, again, I think that black and brown children are always going to be at a disadvantage. It's just historic. Mm-hmm. If you go back in history, I mean, you were never meant to be the best of the best. If you were, you spoke good English, they say you're talking white.
I think it's frustrating as a kid because you don't play into it, you're articulate, you're smart, you got good grades, you're doing all the things, playing sports, and you're excelling, and I'm still an N-word.
Are the guardians of girlhood, paired with multi-generational perspectives. And when we say that every girl has a story, what do we mean? Well, we're here for the girl searching for her people, the girl craving an outlet, the girl with an incarcerated parent or a broken home, the girl who hides in the bathroom at lunch, the girl who doesn't believe in herself, the girl with big dreams but no idea where to start. By opening up and sharing experiences, we not only empower ourselves, we inspire others. We express, we create, and we elevate. This is Love Girls, the podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Love Girls, the podcast. I'm your co-host, Jasmine Beavers-Gunn, and today is a special one because we're kicking off the Race Reimagined Girls Healing Illinois, a three-part podcast series from Her Voice Media. At Her Voice Media, we believe storytelling is a form of healing. So this series creates space for girls to have honest, intergenerational conversations about race, identity, and what it looks like to imagine a world beyond racism, a world where our communities feel safe and seen and whole. Each episode is led by our youth fellows who step into the role of storytellers and interviewers, and they're learning directly from educators, mentors, and local leaders. Together, we're reflecting on the past and also dreaming up something better for the future. Today, we're honored to kick things off with Rita Jett, who is an educator, a mentor, and a longtime community advocate, who's joining us to share her story, her perspective, and what healing looks like to her. Rita Jett is an educator in the Rock Island Milan School District. She has over 30 years of experience in the field of education and is currently the behavior interventionist at Edison Junior High School. Ms. Jett grew up on the west end of Rock Island and is also a member of the West End Revitalization Steering Committee. She's earned a plethora of local, statewide, and national awards throughout her career as an educator, including the 2024 Citizen of the Year Award for the City of Rock Island. She was also nominated by her principal, Tia Edwards, for the 2025 National Life's Group Life Changer of the Year Award. She also received the Illinois State Board of Education Award for those who excel in teaching in 2025. Before we meet our esteemed guests, let's do some quick intros from the Her Voice Media team. I will start with my co-host and my favorite sister.
Let the people know. Hey, everyone. It's Kayla Babers, co-host of Love Girls, the podcast. Also, Her Voice Media photographer and everything creative. I'm so excited to be here with a team of beautiful young ladies. And I can't wait to see what kind of conversation we dive into.
Hello, my name is Kyla Nephew. I'm 16 years old and I'm homeschooled and I'm really excited to be here today.
My name is Tamaya Rogers. I'm 17, and I'm also excited to be here as well.
What do you do? Let them know. Come on, read your resume, girl.
Okay, so I program machines. I do CNC work, and yeah. Oh, and I also work for Her Voice Media, and I'm really enjoying that as well.
Let me add that she directed her first photo shoot yesterday. So I just need us all to give a little, you can't see it, but we're doing
finger
it.
Finger clapping.
Hi, my name is Amaya Woods. I am a college student at Augustana College. I'm also a junior and I am majoring in physics of engineering.
Ooh, okay. That girl is smart. Yes.
And here at Her Voice Media, I am the production and communication assistant.
Yes, ma'am. And for the woman of the hour, the lady we've all been waiting to hear from, the GOAT, the best that ever did it, Rock Island native, one of Rock Island's finest teachers, Miss Rita Jett.
Woo! Yeah! What an introduction. Hello, everybody, and I'm so happy to be here.
We love having family in the studio. We can really cut up.
And are. Okay, Kyla, you want to kick us off?
All right. Just to start off today, would you mind telling us a bit about your experience being a Black woman and an educator, a college athlete, growing up in Rock Island?
Wow, that was quite a bit. So let me just start off with the earlier part.
Yeah.
We went from my college to... So let me start off with my childhood. I grew up here in the West End of Rock Island, the ACP, which is also known as the Arsenal Courts Project.
Okay.
That is now called Century Woods. Century Woods, which is a very, very diverse community right now. So I'm happy to see what it has evolved into. I grew up on the West End of Rock Island. I attended Grant Elementary, which is now Thurgood. I went on to Edison Junior High, where I am now an educator, a behavior interventionist. I started participating in sports in junior high competitively, track and field. Basketball I took on at a very early age in elementary. From Edison, I went to Rock Island High School, where I excelled as well. Got a few little things underneath my belt. I'm a high school All-American as well. From there, I had to make some tough decisions to go to college. Mm. I had several opportunities to accept scholarships elsewhere, but I had some very strong mentors in my life that told me, you know, if you don't make it in college and you get hurt, are you going to enjoy being in that environment? Mm. Lucky for me, I was recruited by a coach at Augustana who presented me with a very good package. And so that is where I did my 4 years of education in elementary education. I excelled in basketball and track. And as Kayla mentioned earlier, I mean, Jasmine mentioned earlier, I was inducted to the Hall of Fame in athletics for track and field.
We love to see it. Okay. I'm just like, it's giving Black excellence.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, you know, you don't look at it as Black excellence until you hear somebody else say it.
Exactly.
So I never acknowledge my accolades until I hear someone else say it. Otherwise, it's just like,
I mean,
that's what hard work gets you.
Let
if you
know.
Work hard, it'll pay off.
Let
and that's what I try to instill in my students. If you work hard at something, it's going to come. Do what you have to do so you can do what you want to do.
I love that. So we already know Rock Island has a specific reputation. And maybe you can touch on that a little bit. As somebody who decided to stay in the community and give into the community that you grew from, what do you say about the stereotypes that come up about the West End of Rock Island, the Arsenal Courts, people who come from there? And growing up, how did you battle that?
As you're going through school, when you have something or you don't, as a kid, I didn't know I was poor. My mother was one of those people who started Christmas shopping the day after Christmas. So when Christmas came around the next year,
Yes, ma'am. We
had gifts all over the tree. We were very family oriented. We sat down to dinner all the time. So I didn't know anything different until I got out of that situation. And I see kids today. The stereotypes are from the kids are west from the West End. The expectation is not as high.
Mm.
I'm just going to call it what it is. People don't expect you to do well. I was fortunate enough to go to an elementary school where I had several minority teachers. And one who inspired me to become a teacher. So during my time, I was lucky enough to have those teachers who taught Black history, who gave me those values that I needed and gave me hope and aspirations of wanting to do something bigger than the West End of Rock Island. That's just a place. So you don't have to be a product of your environment. So when I became a teacher, I wanted to do the same thing for my students. I wanted to give them that hope. I wanted to give them that dream. And so that's why when I started teaching, I taught for like 6 years and I said, there's something else I want to do with myself. So I packed up my stuff and I headed to California because voiceovers was something that I really wanted to do. And so if I'm preaching that to my kids, then I got to go and step out on faith myself. And I did that. And that's how I got to California. And I was there for a long time. And then I came back to this area because I knew what my calling was. I knew I wanted to be a teacher since elementary school. And I knew I wanted to be an actress or voiceover artist.
And we can tell because you are so comfy behind the mic.
Yes, we love it.
And you have such a soothing voice. I could listen to you talk all day.
Thank you, Jazz. And I was able to do them both. I mean, it wasn't easy. It was tough. But I was able to live out what I said. I practiced what I preached. Mm-hmm. I didn't just stay in a rut, because a lot of times, especially our kids, we are dreamers. I'm going to be a professional athlete. I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be a lawyer. Until you get to college and they say you got this ology class, this biology, theology, physiology, then you go, whoa, 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 woulda, coulda, shoulda been, right? I'm going to do something different. So you have to have somebody to push you. So important to find people that are going to push you and not bring you down. It's easy to be a nobody. It's hard to be somebody.
Okay. As a longtime educator, what are some of the most pressing needs you see amongst youth in Rock Island's West End?
Well, I will say this. When I first started teaching, the thirst for knowledge was there. Because I've been doing this for so long, since 1987, I've seen a transition to kids who could read, who could write, who were excited about learning, to fast forward post-COVID, where kids can't write their names in cursive. People cannot add. People cannot write. So it's huge. It's a vast difference. Like, I had third graders who could write full paragraphs, fifth graders who could write essays and win contests, to I'm no longer in the classroom, but I can see the decline in education. The value of education has gone down. And that's a little concerning for me. It's very concerning, because the value of education has diminished a little bit. And I think that our households have got to do a better job. I know a lot of times as educators, we get the brunt of, my kid can't read, you guys aren't doing this, you guys aren't doing that. But education starts at home. At kindergarten to like third grade, kids are, they can catch on very quickly. They can speak languages, multi-languages. We're the only culture that can only speak one language. You think about it, here in Rock Island, what I love now about our community is that we have over 40 different languages.
Well, I just want to iterate that we actually have a bilingual fellow right here in the room. I saw your side eye. We know. Give us a little something on the mic.
Estoy muy agradecido para esta oportunidad y, you know, just being here today and this podcast.
There we go.
Muy bueno.
So we're making progress, but I hear you. Our kids can barely speak English, so I see the gap every day. Shoot, I work a full-time job, and I see the gap in the adults. Yeah. So I think it's interesting that you said it starts at home, because Teresa started reading to me and Jazz very young. Mm-hmm. And Jasmine even has a reading disability, and she still excelled at reading, writing, and comprehension. So I think that today's parents need to do a better job of that 90s parenting, mm-hmm. of not leaving up your child's future to random strangers. Granted, if they in Miss Rita Jett's hands, they're going to be all right.
Okay.
But every teacher isn't that way. And Jazz and I also had that experience in the Rock Island education system.
And also, you guys have parents who had expectations. Mm-hmm. You weren't expected to fail because you had a slight disability. Mm-hmm. You were able to overcome that. And I think sometimes kids are stigmatized because people do put disabilities on them. Sometimes mm-hmm. children are placed in programs that they shouldn't be in, because the lack of expectation or the lack of confidence to try and do something better, because you've been pigeonholed already. You're not going to be good enough. You're not good enough to do this. You're not going to be anything. And I've heard former students tell me that other teachers have told them that they weren't going to amount to anything.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. I was one of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And another thing about being in education is that, you know, we're here to lift up kids. We're here to empower them and give them hope, give them dreams, not tear them down. And I say that every day. I meet with my students on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and I give them words of encouragement all the time. I tell them all the time to speak with your chin up. Mm. Your words are important. Advocate for yourself. Again, you don't have to be from where you are. Period.
So I have dyslexia.
And for the longest time, I mean, I was 14, 15, 16 when my mom actually told me that I had a learning disability. And I was like, well, why? It was because I couldn't read a clock mm-hmm. on the wall. You know, I would have to count out the spaces and it would take me longer than people. And I played the piano for a really long time and I couldn't sight read my music. I had been training for 6, 7, 8 years and I still could not sight read music. And then one day my mom's like, yeah, girl, you will never probably be able to sight read music because you're dyslexic. And I said, good to know. And I was like, why did you never tell me? And she's like, because I didn't want you to use it as an excuse. I didn't want you to use it as a crutch. I didn't want other people to use it against you. She's like, so I just made you read more and I made you practice more. And she was like, and you're doing well. So you didn't necessarily, it would have been good to know. But I didn't necessarily need that to know that and use that as an excuse to excel. And I'm curious to kind of hear and understand how all of this and your experiences as a teacher and growing up on the West End, like, how does race play a role specifically?
Well, you know, again, I think that Black and brown children are always going to be at a disadvantage. It's just historic. Mm-hmm. If you go back in history, I mean, you were never meant to be the best of the best. If you were, you spoke good English, they say you're talking white. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that speaking correctly had a color. Mm-hmm. So, and so when you come out of the bag and you're able to code switch, because we can, and I don't know many cultures that can code switch, and walk into a room and we can have a conversation with Michelle Obama, or we can have a conversation with Leroy Brown from down the street and adapt our conversations. I think that, again, the stigmatism that's put on our children, the expectation, you have to be in the system and have teachers who care about you. We get left out all the time. Mm. People ask me things like, oh, well, how come this school has this and you guys don't?
Yeah.
Unconsciously or consciously, it's there. The inequities are visible sometimes.
Yeah.
You just have to get around it. If you let that hold you down, that's going to always be your crutch. We don't get it because this. We're not going to get it because we are Black. That's easy to say.
Yeah.
We hear it all the time. They're not going to do it because we're Black. So we know that. So we have to do better. We have to work a little bit harder.
Mm-hmm.
We just do.
And do you feel like that's fair?
It's not fair, but that's the times we're in, and unfortunately we're in a country right now where that behavior is perpetuated yeah. by the highest level of leadership that we have.
That's a loose
so that's to hard to fight alone itself mm-hmm. when your leader of a free nation is you know, I don't want to get political, but when they're not demonstrating what positive leadership looks like, it's easy to follow that. It really is. Or it's easy for people to say, you know, you got the job because you're Black.
Mm.
If she wasn't that, she wouldn't get the job. Or you got it because you cheated. There's no cheating. We're smart people. Mm. We really are smart individuals. We have to give ourselves more credit. And we have to walk with our chest out.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to speak correctly. We have to do things better than most. And Jasmine and Kayla were growing up, you didn't have a cell phone. Or you didn't have somebody on social media telling you you're ugly and this is what pretty looks like.
No, they told us to our face.
They told you to your face.
Yep.
Okay, mm-hmm. but imagine getting it now through digital media and you got 100,000 people that are giving it to you. Kids don't communicate anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the language might be in the text message, shut up talking to me. But on the other end, girl, you better shut up talking to me. It doesn't have a tone, but we give it a tone.
Mm-hmm.
Being present. In someone's life, even as a mentor, if you're an auntie, be present in your niece and nephew's lives. If you're a parent, go through the phones.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know what's going on, because if you don't, we're losing our kids. And I'm afraid that if we don't get a hold to them, it's not going to be good, because right now we're dealing with a whole lot of kids who can't read and write. That's a big problem, that you can't read and write. A hustle is not going to get you everything that you need. It's important. Who are our future doctors and who are our future leaders? Somebody is going to be the president of the United States. What do they look like? As you can see, education is not the key right now to be the president of the United States.
Let them know.
I'm just saying. I'm not trying to bash, but I'm just saying, look at the level of education that our past presidents have had. And look at the level of education that our current president has. I'm not saying I'm against him or for him. I'm just saying we have to do better as a country if we want to move forward. Otherwise, things are falling slowly. Things are falling. We see what's going on in Minnesota and Chicago. Who knows what the next city is? So it's important that we educate, and violence is not the answer to solving the problems and issues that we have today.
So I know that you mentioned that building the future is very important, but what do you think, how do you think that race has played a role in the development and current realities of West End Rock Island?
People on the West End of Rock Island, as you already know, most of them are from different countries at this point, right? It's so diverse down there, but economically, they're the lowest paid people that live in Rock Island or on the West End of Rock Island, right? So you have to keep in mind, number one, we have World Relief that brings in people from Africa, from Pakistan, from Iraq, Iran, all over the different countries in Africa, and they bring them here. And they usually are placed on the West End of Rock Island. So what does that do for the West End of Rock Island? We're not growing because we don't have the money. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't even have the education because we don't have the language, right? And then when you go into the schools, whose test scores are going to be affected the most? Mm-hmm. So guess who's going to be on the list all the time? The watch list. We are, because our kids don't even speak the language. Let's all of us go to China. Let's sit down in a Chinese school and let's see if we can pass the test. I've had excellent scholars come through that don't know the language, but once they mastered it, they roll right back into it,
yep.
Right? We don't have anything right now on the West End. We don't have a grocery store. We don't have a restaurant. We don't even have a place for the kids to go play sports. Everything is what they quote, is on top of the hill. So the West End stops right about Longview Park and you hit the top of the hill and they call that the hill. Because now all the homes are on top of the hill. So if you're on 18th, about 17th Street in Rock Island, if you're familiar with Rock Island, 17th Street is like at the top of the hill. Anything down the hill is considered the West End of Rock Island. And economically, you know, most people that are in that poverty range are not living above that hill. So that's almost like a status, right?
So what I'm hearing is mm-hmm. all these systemic issues are kind of a false narrative.
Yeah. Yes.
They're framing the stats, the percentages in a way that makes it look like we're underperforming. But the reality is you can't have numbers without context.
Yeah.
And I think I'm glad you're here today to kind of put that out there. Because I think a lot of people, like we said, have the misconceptions.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to be like, oh, their test scores are down. Their poverty level's down, whatever. But let's start from the very tippy top. Not even the tippy top. But the West End of Rock Island is a product of redlining.
Yeah.
Yes. We all, black and brown people, were forced down there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was laws and rules or unwritten laws and things created to keep us systematically at the bottom of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm wondering what kind of story Her Voice Media can tell, how we can break down these stigmas, because they're really, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Dangerous?
Yeah, dangerous.
Like, our youth are suffering. The young adults are suffering. I find it hilarious, not funny, haha, funny,
mm-hmm.
weird,
mm-hmm.
that people say Rock Island is so dangerous and they're mm-hmm. scared.
Right.
Me and Jasmine split our time between the top of the hill and the bottom of the hill.
Yeah.
And what I can tell you is we never felt unsafe on 9th Street.
No, never.
Ever. But we just dealt with things on top of the hill mm-hmm. that to me were more detrimental than anybody that looks like me at the bottom of the hill could do or say to me.
Yeah.
I just want to ask Jasmine, because we both did sports for Rock Island. And I can tell you, my personal experience, horrible, awful. I played tennis, basketball, and I did marching band. And the experiences that I had as a young black girl, being called the N-word, being told I cheated, mm-hmm. being told mm-hmm. that they didn't know monkeys could hold a tennis racket. And then having a non-black coach be like, Chinna, don't interact with it. We're children. And so I think it's frustrating as a kid because you don't play into it. You're articulate. Yeah. You're smart. You got good grades. You're doing all the things, playing sports, and you're excelling. And I'm still an N-word.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It triggered me.
It was impossible because wherever we went, people were scared of us. And
we're children.
And it was twofold. They were scared of us because we were black, and they were also scared of us because we were really talented, you know?
Amazing.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, like, Rock Island is notorious for superior athletes.
We produce Olympic level athletes.
But to walk into a basketball tournament or a track meet and people turn around, walk the other way because they see you coming, they see a group of majority black and brown people coming, you could tell that people were intimidated by us. And I don't think it was always just because we were super talented. I think people were scared of us. And that was the stigma that Rock Island had around it, that we were dangerous. And we just were there to compete and to have fun and to show our talents. But a lot of times, and I remember I played freshman and sophomore basketball, and then I also ran track all 4 years. And I also was a cheerleader. And I can remember instances, even as a cheerleader, for example, the other team, the other cheerleaders, you know, acting odd towards us. And it wasn't in a way that, like, oh, this is a friendly rivalry. Mm-hmm. It was in a, y'all are a little too ghetto for us. Y'all are a little too much for us. Like, we don't want to associate with you. And, like, our coaches, like you mentioned, a lot of our coaches were not a black or brown person. A lot of coaches were white. And the rhetoric that they would always give us was that we had to be better and we had to show up better. And we were like, there's nothing else we can do.
Nothing.
It's because exhausting. When we walk in the room and they see that we're all black, like sometimes it felt like we already had our three strikes against us and we haven't even done anything. And so then when you get on the court and people are pushing you around, if you push back, all of a sudden you're getting the foul and you're getting the tech, you know? And then you feel like you're perpetuating these stereotypes. I just felt like sometimes, sorry, that was a lot.
No.
I just felt like sometimes you could never win.
No matter what you did.
You could be the most poised, the most kind, the most friendly, and it still literally would not matter.
I think, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, your confidence, you walk in with confidence, you talk that.
Yeah.
Your athletic ability to shine tapped into their insecurities, and that you cannot control because they don't have what you have.
Yeah.
You're smart, you're educated, and you're athletic. Yeah. And that's a hard pill to swallow. Because when we start jumping into sports that we were never into, when I say we, I'm talking about brown and black people, we are excelling. Take a look at ice skating.
Yes.
Talk about it.
They doing their thing.
Take a look at tennis. Don't think that, you know, Venus and Serena paved the way for these young ladies. They took it too. Mm-hmm. But you have to remember, it's systemic. Where did that come from? Your mama, your mama's mama, your mama's mama. It goes back. Yeah. Until people want to change who they are, don't let their insecurities doubt who you are as an individual. Mm-hmm. Because that's what it is. Their insecurities with your, did you walk in here with all that confidence? Or you think you're better than me because you went to Augustana. No, but I did have grades.
Yeah.
In me, the way I'm structured, the way my parents raised me, was to follow the rules, get good grades. I did like all the perfect things. I played sports. I played tennis, softball, track and field, did pole vault. A lot of people of color do not do pole vault. So when they seen me, they were like, are you like, does it feel weird? You're the only person of color. Like, I was the only girl I seen doing pole vault at all the meets. There was like few, maybe one other people. And you know, you'd be like, I wish you luck because like there's not a lot of other people of color.
Yeah.
Yes. A stereotype that I've tried to fit into based off of what was placed on me was being ghetto. Because like you had mentioned earlier, the term whitewashed. And for those of you who do not know what whitewash is, it's where you sound proper to the point of where people think you are trying to be white because all they hear is people who are Caucasian talk properly. They're not used to people of color talking properly. So a lot of the times in the school, like going to school, talking with people, I'd have conversations with my friends and I thought it was normal because in my household, we spoke properly. Like that's what would get you places in life, in my household, speaking properly. So I'd also take that out into the community and speak amongst my friends and stuff in that manner. And a lot of the times I would get the word, oh, you're whitewashed. Oh, you're whitewashed. And then I have people in my community telling me I'm whitewashed and people above the hill in another community telling me I'm ghetto. And so a lot of the times because I live in a place where they believe that due to the outsiders, and I would say like outsiders as in people above the hill saying below the hill is ghetto and below the hill needs to speak like this. So a lot of the times when we're in that situation, we tend to believe that ourselves. Like, we tend to place ourselves in those categories. So a lot of people, I didn't really take offense to that because I realized a lot of people thought that that was a normal thing. Like, oh, you're below the hill. Why are you not speaking, like, with slang? Why are you not speaking X, Y, and Z? And so I started to kind of, like...
Did you tell them you can?
Yeah, okay, I did.
And I
like,
also,
I can code switch.
Question is, do they call... when white kids start using...
AAVE?
Ebonics, or they start speaking hip hop, are they blackwashed? I'm just curious.
No, they're sometimes. Not blackwashed. They're what just, do they call they're that? Just seasoned, you know. They get turn to being seasoned.
But you know what? Okay, I'm sick of this conversation that what is proper? Yeah. Enunciating words, because if we want to be real, it's BS. That's systemic too.
Yes,
because I can be intelligent. And I feel like code switching should be considered a second language. I go into my office every day and you wouldn't know who I was. And I just find it interesting that I think it's interesting that sometimes how racism works, you want to pull every little bit of culture out. AAV is a dialect. It's different anywhere you go in the United States. And just to be like, oh, that's ghetto because I might... shorten my little to a little or put it in on something. Like, it's just, it's so frustrating and annoying. And I just think having these open conversations on talking about both sides is really going to help bridge the gap. Because we can't keep acting like this isn't happening. Like, in 2026, racism, microaggressions, this shouldn't be a thing. And I'm at my capacity, as you can tell. But Kyla, do you want to give us your viewpoint on your experience as a Rock Island resident, as a young lady?
Around 2022 to 2023, I began skateboarding. The skateboarding community is not really talked about very much, or you wouldn't typically think of even a woman skateboarding. So going to the skate park in downtown Davenport, I'm there, I'm introducing myself. Hey, I'm from Rock Island. They're, oh, you're from Rock Island. Me being more, I guess, sheltered growing up, I would be like, what do you mean? Like, it's Rock Island. Like, what's wrong with Rock Island? And I kind of came to a realization that some people think of Rock Island as less or a more down, like, not as good of a neighborhood. Recently, I've kind of been getting more into, like, proving or making a point of bringing the diversity to new groups and settings. I've taken on new sports such as figure skating and snowboarding, just proving that you can be from Rock Island, you can be from Moline, you can really be from anywhere. It doesn't really matter where you're from, and that you can be good, you can be proper if that's what you are, or if that's what people want to call you. You don't have to fit into a specific stereotype just because you're from a specific place or the place that you grew up. You can fight adversity and make changes and speak up for yourself and your community that you're from. And you can also talk to the people around you and the younger generation, kids, youth, sports groups that you're in, and also inform them that they can help make that change today and make the community a better place. Okay, people may think Rock Island West End is not as good of a place. Okay, what can we do about that? How can we make our community seen and seen as a better place?
If you like snowboarding and you like skateboarding and you like tennis and you want to swim, those are not necessarily traditionally spaces that Black girls are welcome in. But she said, I'm going to put myself there anyways because I want to. And absolutely. That's what I'm interested in. And I love that. And I wanna hear from you all. And we're gonna try and keep it short and cute in like one sentence. But if you could kind of sum up in your perfect world what it would look like for girls to take back the narrative about race and reimagine it, what would that be like for you?
Having those courageous conversations, addressing racial injustices, racial biases, we have them. Healing comes through personal stories, I think, your experiences. And I'm going to take it back to when I went here to Augustana, because coming from the West End of Rock Island, coming to Augustana was quite the culture shock for me. My friends who happened to be white would ask me all the time, why are you putting that stuff in your hair? Why are you doing this? And I would say, because in my culture, this is what we do. And so slowly, I would introduce her to things that happened in my culture, and she would introduce me to things that were happening in her culture. We are still friends to this day, but I think it's important that we recognize that people are different. I know sometimes people say, I don't see color. Well, that's very disrespectful if you don't see me as a brown-skinned girl.
Women just coming together in general is very important. I think being in different groups, spaces, sports, regardless of what it is, coming together and getting that understanding is very, very, very important.
Being unbothered, personally, as Ms. Jett noticed, I was very triggered by this conversation. And I think I'm slowly working on just existing in whatever form, however I talk, however my hair looks, without worrying about the repercussions or what might happen next. So I'm just going to be unapologetically Black and leave it at that.
I love it. I've really enjoyed this conversation today, and we are so thankful to have a mentor and a teacher and a friend like Miss Jett come hang out with us in the studio today. We appreciate you so much. Thank you for listening to us, and also thank you for your wisdom and your knowledge. This has been a special episode of Love Girls, the podcast, Race Reimagined, Girls Healing Illinois. And like I mentioned before, at Her Voice Media, we do believe that healing and storytelling go hand in hand. And so having these conversations are the first step to healing each other. I hope you have the best day, and we'll see you next time on Love Girls, the podcast. Bye.